listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. Welcome to the reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonparable for Friday, October 16th, 2020. I'm Kyle Keegan from Drake University. Here is our first story. Trump in Iowa touts ethanol farm policy. Des Moines. Campaigning in Iowa, President Donald Trump touted his administration's work to help the ethanol industry and farmers in Iowa. Trump's administration created a rule that allows gas stations to sell higher ethanol blend year-round. But when Trump said during a campaign rally Wednesday night at the airport in Des Moines that, quote, they were killing ethanol, he would have to be referring to his own administration. The ethanol industry in Iowa have been feeling pinched in large part because Trump's environmental agency was granting waivers that allowed large oil companies to skirt the federal ethanol mandate. Quote, they were killing ethanol, Trump said. Quote, I made it year-round, 15%, and it's great stuff. Trump's campaign rally Wednesday night was the first event to feature either presidential candidate in Iowa during the 2020 general election campaign. Democrat and former U.S. Vice President Joe Biden was in Iowa regularly during the run-up to the Iowa caucuses, but has not returned since earning his party's nomination. Trump made an official visit to Iowa in August to view the Derecho damage, but did not make a campaign visit here before Wednesday. Trump won Iowa by nearly 10 percentage points in 2016, not the 11 points he said during Wednesday's remarks. But polls on this year's race in Iowa have consistently showed him virtually neck and neck with Biden. Nationally, Biden leads Trump in polling in many of the battleground states that will help determine the election's outcome. Quote, you're a very powerful state, politically. You have tremendous influence and tremendous power. You've never let me down, said Trump, who addressed the crowd of thousands for roughly 90 minutes. Quote, we have more enthusiasm now than we ever did 4 years ago. And we have great polling numbers, although you'll see fake polling numbers. Trump also touted his administration's financial relief packages for farmers who have been hurting because of falling crop prices, partially attributable to trade tensions created by Trump's administration renegotiating multiple international trade deals. Trump recalled farmers telling him in a White House meeting that they do not want government subsidies, only fair trade opportunities. Quote, I never heard that, Trump said. Quote, most people, they don't care. Call it subsidies, call it cash. They say, give me money. The farmers are unbelievable. They're the heart of this nation. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds and former Governor Terry Branstad, who Reynolds succeeded after Branstad was tapped by Trump to serve as U.S. Ambassador to China, spoke at the event, heaping praise on Trump. Quote, if 2020 has taught us anything, it is that leadership matters, Reynolds said. Quote, it's why it is critical that we re-elect Donald Trump for four more years. Trump's rally was held at COVID-19-related hospitalizations in Iowa are surging. The rally was held outdoors at the airport. No social distancing measures were in place, and face mask usage was sparse. Hospitalizations are at their highest point of the pandemic in Iowa, and deaths are increasing as well. Trump was hospitalized with COVID-19 just shy of 2 weeks ago. His physician was since declared that Trump has tested negative for the virus and is no longer at risk of infecting others. Quote, Iowa has been ravaged by a coronavirus pandemic with cases surpassing 100,000 this week and COVID-19 hospitalizations hitting a new high. President Trump isn't coming to the Hawkeye State to offer words of comfort to those suffering or a helping hand to the Iowans who are out of a job. Or an actual plan to get the virus under control. Instead, he's here to spread more lies about the pandemic and distract from his record of failure, Biden said in a statement issued by his campaign. Quote, that's not good enough. Iowans whose lives have been thrown into chaos need real leadership, not more division, Biden added. Quote, I've seen our country through dark times before, helping rescue an economy in crisis, and I've fought for the health care protections this administration is battling in the U.S. Supreme Court to undo. We're better than this moment under President Trump, and as president, I will bring this country together so that we can build back better. Trump spent most of his first part of his remarks referring to a New York Post story published earlier Wednesday that made allegations about Biden's son Hunter. As of Wednesday evening, neither the Associated Press, Washington Post, nor New York Times had confirmed a New York Post story. Late in the rally, Trump told the crowd of his plan to award the Presidential Medal of Freedom to Gann Gable, an Iowa wrestling legend, as an athlete and coach. Trump recognized Gable, who in turn praised the president. Quote, "This guy's already a one-time champion," Gable said of Trump. "But because he's open for learning and he's already very competent, he's going to be a multi-champion president of the United States of America." Early voting in Iowa is already underway. Election day is Tuesday, November 3rd. GOP pushes Barrett toward court as Democrats decry sham. Washington. Republicans powered Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett closer to confirmation to Thursday, pushing past Democratic objections and other priorities during the COVID-19 crisis in the drive to see President Donald Trump's pick before the November 3rd election. The Senate Judiciary Committee set October 22nd for its vote to recommend Barrett's nomination to the full Senate, with a final confirmation vote expected by month's end. Quote, "A sham," said Senator Amy Klobuchar, Democrat of Minnesota. Quote, "Power grab," protested Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat from Connecticut. Quote, "Not normal," said Senator Dick Durbin, Democrat from Illinois. Quote, "You don't convene a Supreme Court confirmation hearing in the middle of a pandemic when the Senate's on recess, when voting has already started in the presidential election in a majority of states," declared Senator Chris Coons, Democrat from Delaware. Republicans eager to fill the seat of late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg countered that Trump is well within bounds to fill the vacancy, and they have the votes to do it. Relying on a slim Senate majority, Trump's Republicans are poised to lock a 6-3 conservative court majority for years to come. Senator John Cornyn, Republican from Texas, said he understands Democrats' quote, "disappointment." He said, quote, "Their loss is the American people's gain. Barrett's confirmation would bring the most pronounced ideological change on the court in 30 years, from the liberal icon Ginsburg to the conservative appeals court judge from Indiana. The shift is poised to launch a new era of court rulings on abortion, voting rights, and other matters that are now open to new uncertainty." The 48-year-old Barrett was careful during 2 days of public testimony not to tip her views on many issues or take on the president who nominated her. Facing almost 20 hours of questions from senators, she declined to offer specifics beyond a vow to keep an open mind and take the cases as they come. Quote, "It's not the law of Amy," the mother of seven told senators at various times. Barrett wasn't present for Thursday's hearing, the last of the week's sessions as the coronavirus pandemic hangs over the country. Two GOP senators on the committee tested positive for the virus, and two campaign staff members for Democratic Senator Kamala Harris, the vice presidential nominee, also tested positive, rounding her travel Thursday, the campaign announced. Among those testifying Thursday in support of Barrett's nomination, retired appellate court judge Thomas Griffith assured senators that Barrett would be among justices who, quote, can and do put aside party and politics. But a coalition of civil rights groups opposed her nomination. Christian Clark, the president of the Lawyers Committee on Civil Rights, said the judge's unwillingness to speak forcefully for the Voting Rights Act and other issues should, quote, sound an alarm, end quote, for Americans with a case heading to the high court. Trump's Republican allies, led by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, are reshaping the judiciary, having changed Senate rules at the start of the president's term to allow 51 votes, rather than the traditional 60, to advance the Supreme Court nominees. With a slim 53-47 majority, her confirmation is almost assured. She would be Trump's third justice on the high court. Counselor Bluffs School's class of 2020 hit 9-year high on ACT scores. Council Bluffs Community School's class of 2020 racked up on the district's 9-year high on ACT college entrance exam scores, a school official said Tuesday. The 2020 graduates who took the test earned an average composite score of 20.9 out of 36, Chief Academic Officer Corey Worfman said in a presentation to the Board of Education. Quote, "That's a 9-year high in our school district," he said. Quote, "Certainly that's worth a celebration." Class members also achieved 9-year highs in all of the 4 subtests, averaging 19.6 on the math subtest, 20.6 on English, 22.7 on reading, and 21.6 on science. Voorhees' four-man's chart showed ACT has not yet released an annual report showing how the students' scores compared with state and national averages, he said. About 38% of 2020 graduates took the ACT test, up slightly from the 35% of the class of 2019 who participated. The percentage of students who take the exam has generally decreased over the past 6 years after a high of 52% in 2014, Vorfman said. Quote, the number taking the ACT mirrors the percentage going to a four-year college, he said. While that number has declined, the number of students attending junior college or trade school has increased, he said. Students of different races make up roughly the same percentage of exam participants as they do of the total student population, Vorfman said. Whites, African Americans, and Asians are slightly overrepresented, and Hispanics and American Indian Alaska Natives are somewhat underrepresented. Fewer and fewer colleges are requiring ACT scores for admission, Vorfman said. Quote, more than 60% of colleges don't require ACT anymore, he said. Some universities have said they don't even accept it anymore. Quote, ACT certainly is one of the indicators we use to gauge if our kids are future ready, Vorfman said. While this trend started before the COVID-19 pandemic, he said, the pandemic has accelerated it by forcing the cancellation or postponement of many testing sessions, which prompted more colleges to drop the requirement. Iowa Western awarded grant to help provide job training. Iowa Western Community College has been awarded a $99,000 Coronavirus Relief Fund Employer Innovation Fund grant to help provide job skills training for high-demand jobs. The grant, one of 65 across the state totaling more than $4.3 million, will help employers, nonprofit organizations, and educational institutions provide training to Iowans whose jobs have been affected by the coronavirus pandemic, a press release from Iowa Workforce Development stated. Quote, Future Ready Iowa's Employer Innovation Fund is centered around a grassroots effort to solve local workforce challenges while helping Iowans find economic opportunity in their community, Governor Kim Reynolds said in the release. Quote, These programs not only help those affected by the pandemic, they will also focus on recruiting our minority and underrepresented communities to help us diversify our workforce and provide equal chances of success for all Iowans. Iowa Western's grant money will go to the college's Fred Liesel Center of Excellence for Advanced Manufacturing in Corinda, said Mark Stanley, Vice President of Economic and Workforce Development. Quote, Through the grant, we were able to add some additional assets to the program, he said. The college purchased a shearing machine as well as a hydraulic training unit, wielding supplies and software for 3D modeling and a logic controller, Stanley said. Some of the money went to purchase laptops and a few hotspots for students who needed them to learn virtually. The shearing machine is a hydraulic-powered machine that is used to cut metal. Quote, That's going to be a fairly standard type of equipment, he said. The controller is, quote, brains of manufacturing, end quote, for computer numerically controlled machines and other equipment, Stanley said. Quote, The trainer gives us the opportunity to teach them hydraulics and fluid power in a simulation setting without necessarily having to do it on the real thing in the plant, he said. Wielding supplies include things like metal, rods, and tanks of gas, as well as any masks or gloves that are needed, Stanley said. Quote, You go through a fairly significant amount of that, he said. The hydraulics trainer and wielding supplies were especially urgent, said Starling Purdue, Director of Economic Development. Quote, These are things we'll need this month, she said. The center usually admits 15 students per year to its two-year program, although this year it was limited to 9, Purdue said. That way, students are still able to socially distance in the lab. The college tries to stay on top of what equipment manufacturers are using and give students experience on the same type of machine, Stanley said. The Fred Lyle Center of Excellence for Advanced Manufacturing was developed in collaboration with area industry and still has an industry sharing committee, he said. The center, housed in a former gymnasium on the Clarinda campus, opened in 2017. The late Fred Lyle, who was president and CEO of Lyle Corp. in Clarinda and represented District 1 on the Iowa Western Board of Trustees, played a key role in its development. And Lyle Corp. donated some of the machines needed to equip the lab. It was officially renamed in his honor during the board's meeting on June 25th, 2019. Harrison County reports 6 COVID death. Harrison County has reported a 6th COVID-19 death. Harrison County Public Health Director Brad Brake said a man 81 or older who was a resident at a long-term care facility died after contracting the disease. There are currently 3 outbreaks at long-term care facilities with a total of 183 positive cases and 29 recoveries. Harrison County was at 516 cases out of 3,388 tests on Thursday with 201 recoveries, according to the state COVID-19 website, coronavirus.iowa.gov. The county's 14-day rolling average positivity rate was 25.4%. Pottawatomie County saw an increase of 52 positive cases over 24 hours, with 2,769 cases out of 23,351 tests at 3 p.m. on Thursday, according to the state website. There were 283 new tests. There have been 43 COVID-19 deaths in the county and 2,067 recoveries. That's an increase of 12 over 24 hours. The country's overall positivity rate was 11.3%, with its 14-day rate at 13.5%. Iowa saw a jump of 1,526 positive cases, with a total at 103,632 out of 881,809 on Thursday afternoon. There were 7,643 new tests. The state was at 80,185 recoveries, an increase of 1,074. The state reported 10 new deaths, with the total now at 1,506. The Associated Press reported hospitalizations continued to increase as the state set a new high of 482 people being treated in hospitals on Thursday. Virus outbreaks were reported in 61 long-term care facilities statewide. Of Iowa's 99 counties, only 4 had a positivity rate below 5%, a level at which many public health officials recommend mask wearing, social distancing measures, and limits on crowd sizes. The 7-day rolling average of the positivity rate in Iowa has risen over the past 2 weeks from 17.18% on September 30th to 19.58% on October 14th, according to an Associated Press analysis of data from Johns Hopkins University. Iowa's rate was 6th in the nation. Symptoms in people who have been exposed to coronavirus can include fever, cough, and shortness of breath, according to the Iowa Department of Public Health. The symptoms may appear as few as 2 days or as long as 14 days after exposure. Most people experience mild or moderate symptoms that clear up in 2 to 3 weeks. COVID-19 testing is available in Pottawatomie County via 2 Test Iowa locations, All Care Health Center, 902 South 6th Street, and Western Historic Trail Center, 3434 Richard Downing Avenue. To get tested, residents must complete the online assessment at testiowa.com to schedule an appointment. Face of the day. Ann Brown has worked at Methodist Jenny Edmussen Hospital for 35 years and in the Breast Health Center for 17 years. In her free time, she enjoys spending time with her family, especially her grandchildren and great-grandchildren. She enjoys attending their school activities and celebrating life accomplishments together. Pink Out has always been special to Brown. My favorite thing about Pink Out events is that they provide funds for mammograms to members of our community. Early prevention improves their chances of discovering any disease at their early stages, and this will result in a better treatment outcome. Pink Out activities have been an important part of a breast cancer patient's journey. Whether they're newly diagnosed, a longtime survivor, or a family member of these patients, their attendance at these events has provided education, support, and encouragement, she said. Quote, breast cancer awareness is important to me from having worked at the Breast Health Center for many years. I've seen the importance of early detection and the appreciation of patients who have been provided assistance in obtaining mammograms through Pink Out fundraising events. I've also experienced my mother and daughter being diagnosed with breast cancer. I know firsthand the importance of mammography and early detection. The Methodist Jenny Edmussen Leadership Team, Methodist Jenny Edmussen Foundation and Volunteer Services provide a tremendous amount of time and effort as they work together to deliver awareness and education to our community in the fight against breast cancer. Pink Out t-shirts are on sale now. 100% of the proceeds from the sale of our 2020 certs will help fund mammogram services for women who are uninsured and slash or underinsured. Your support of Pink Out fundraising events during October helped make it possible for the MJEH Breast Health Center to continue its important work within the communities we serve. For more information or to purchase your t-shirt or sweatshirt, please call 712-396-6040 or visit jfoundation.org to download the form. Methodist Jenny Edmondson, recognized for lactation care excellence. Methodist Jenny Edmondson was recently recognized for excellence in lactation care, according to a release from the facility. This week, Jenny Ed officials announced that the International Board of Lactation Consultant Examiners and the International Lactation Consultant Association provided the hospital with the IBCLC Care Award, which recognizes facilities that hire International Board Certified Lactation Consultant IBCLC staff and provide a lactation program for breastfeeding families, according to the release. In addition, Jenny Edmondson showed that it completed activities that help protect, promote, and support breastfeeding. The Methodist Jenny Edmondson Hospital campus is a breastfeeding-friendly location that promotes the benefits of breastfeeding for mother and baby, the release says. Certified lactation consultants offering an outpatient lactation support by phone, by email, or via one-on-one meetings. Support groups are also available, as well as information for breastfeeding moms returning to work. Quote, parents develop a new knowledge base and skill set specific to their baby, said Rita Maiden. Don't know that either. That's the right way to pronounce it. A registered nurse and lactation consultant with Methodist Jenny Edmondson Hospital through a provided statement. Quote, this includes learning what is normal and what a cause for concern is. Our Methodist Jenny Edmondson Birthing Center team strives to teach, guide, and reassure new parents so they can truly enjoy caring for their baby with confidence. Our lactation consultants provide specialized one-to-one care and instruction to help moms succeed. Our care continues beyond the hospital stay, providing support throughout the entire breastfeeding experience. As allied healthcare professionals with the leading internationally recognized certification professional lactation services, IBCLC professionals work in hospitals, birthing centers, clinics, public health agencies, private practice, community settings, and government agencies, the hospital said. There are currently more than 32,500 such professionals in 122 countries. The IBCLC certification program is accredited by the National Commission for Certifying Agencies, NCCA, which represents a mark of quality for certification programs. Forecast: low temps and a few chances for showers this weekend. Cold weather will continue through the day. Today we'll have a high of 57 with a northwest wind that could gust as high as 20 miles per hour, according to the National Weather Service in Valley, Nebraska. Tonight will be mostly cloudy with lows in the 40s. Saturday will have a high of 70 before dropping down to a high of 48 on Sunday. Saturday night through Monday will have a slight chance of showers. The forecast, according to the Weather Service. For Friday, it's going to be sunny with a high near 57. West-northwest wind 6 to 13 miles per hour with gusts as high as 20 miles per hour. Tonight on Friday, it'll be mostly cloudy with a low around 46. Light south wind increasing to 9 to 14 miles per hour in the evening. Winds could gust as high as 21 miles per hour. On Saturday, it'll be partly sunny with a high near 70. South wind 10 to 14 miles per hour becoming west northwest in the afternoon. Winds could gust as high as 20 miles per hour. On Saturday night, there'll be a 20% chance of showers after 1 a.m., mostly cloudy with a low around 36. On Sunday, a 20% chance of showers before 1 p.m., mostly cloudy with a high near 48. On Sunday night, a light chance of showers after 1 a.m., mostly cloudy with a low around 35. Monday, a slight chance of showers, partly sunny with a high near 49. On Monday night, mostly cloudy with a low around 34. Tuesday, widespread frost. Otherwise, partly sunny with a high near 51. Tuesday night, a slight chance of showers, partly cloudy with a low around 37. Wednesday, a slight chance of showers, partly sunny with a high near 58. Now we will be reading the obituaries. Dale Palmer. Dale Palmer died on October 1st, 2020, in Carmichael, California. He was born in Council Bluffs, Iowa, on September 13th, 1939. He was a diesel mechanic for the Council Bluffs bus system and Midwest Transportation before owning his own construction business. He is preceded in death by his parents and wife, Susan. He is survived by his sons, Sean, Thad, Trevor, four grandchildren, sister Darlene, and a host of other family and friends. Graveside service is Saturday, October 17th, 2020, 11 a.m. in the Walnut Hill Cemetery. Loris M. Smith. Loris M. Smith, age 83, died October 13th, 2020. She was born in Carson, Iowa on August 3rd, 1937, to the late Harold and Eleanor Beasley Morris. Loris worked at a CNA at Mercy Hospital for over 33 years. She volunteered at the hospital following her retirement and was very active with the food pantry and Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Council Bluffs. In addition to her parents, she was preceded in death by her husbands, Harvey Call and Harold Smitty Smith, son Douglas Call, stepchildren Stephen Smith and Cheryl Wadden, son-in-law Brian Gardner. Loris is survived by her son Randy Call, stepdaughter Terry Gardner, siblings Gerald Sonny Morris, Charlotte Mietenmeyer, Benjamin Morris, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, nieces, nephews, cousins, and a host of other family and friends. Visitation is at the Hoy Kilnowski Funeral Home on Sunday, October 18, 2020, from 2 to 4 p.m. Funeral service is at the funeral home on Monday at 2 p.m. Interment is in Belknap, might pronounce that wrong, Township Cemetery near Oakland, Iowa. The family will direct memorials. Carrie P. Sorensen. Carrie P. Sorensen, age 64, of Lincoln, Nebraska, passed away October 13, 2020, after a short battle with cancer. Carrie grew up in Neola, Iowa, and graduated from Tri-Center High School in 1974. She was preceded in death by her parents, George and Rosemary Sorensen. A celebration of Carrie's life will be held Saturday, October 17, 2020, at 10 a.m. in St. Patrick's Parish Hall, Neola, Iowa. Reverend Peggy Hall will officiate. Interment will be held in the Neola Township Cemetery. A luncheon will follow the services in the parish hall. In lieu of flowers, memorials are suggested to Rosemary G. Sorensen. Roger K. Fustos. Roger K. Fustos, age 78, of Omaha, formerly of Mon Damon, Iowa, passed away October 13, 2020, at his home. Roger was born January 26, 1942, in Omaha to the late Joseph and Jean Fustos. He graduated from Underwood High School in 1960. Roger proudly served his country in the U.S. Army and served 2 years in Alaska. He married Mary Fran O'Neill on September 12, 1964. They spent 56 blessed years together. From that union, they were blessed with three sons, Paul, Joe, and Kevin. Roger attended Des Moines College, where he majored in meteorology. In 1979, Roger and his family moved to Mount Damon, where they purchased the Iverson Grocery Store. In 1982, Roger went to work for the U.S. Postal Service, working various routes before retiring in 2002. Roger was a member of the American Legion Post number or dash 410 in Little Sioux, Iowa. In addition to his parents, Roger was preceded in death by his sister and brother-in-law, Candace and Guadalupe Zapian, in-laws Don and Mildred O'Neill, brother-in-law, Ron Rochich, I don't know if I pronounced that right, and aunt and uncle, Glenn and Joe Day. He is survived by his loving wife of 56 years, Mary Fran Fustos of Omaha, sons Paul Fustos of Sioux City, Iowa, Joe Fustos of Glenwood, Iowa, Kevin Fustos of Omaha, surrogate daughters, Allison Fleming of Belleuve, Nebraska, and Angel Olson of Papillon, Nebraska. 11 grandchildren, Caleb, Josh, Rachel, Naomi, Ethan, Braden, Kale, Quinn, Brinley, Alexander, newest granddaughter to be born in December of 2020, brother Larry, Fustos of Omaha, nieces, nephews, other family members, and friends. Roger did not know a stranger. Visitation with the family, Sunday, 5 to 7 p.m. with a prayer service at 5:30 p.m. at Cutler O'Neill, Mayor Woodring, Bayless Park Chapel. Funeral service, Monday, 11 a.m. at the funeral home. Interment, Garner Township Cemetery, with full military honors at the grave. A lunch will follow at the Corpus Christi Parish Hall. Memorials are suggested at Gabriel's Corner. Earl Grayson Raitkin. Earl Grayson Raitkin, age 95, passed away October 12, 2020, at Bethany Lutheran Home. Earl was born May 26, 1925, in Council Bluffs, to late Harry and Dorothy Raitkin. He graduated from Abraham Lincoln High School and proudly served his country in the U.S. Navy from 1943 to 46. On June 6, 1948, he was united in marriage to Doris Lawson at Grace Presbyterian Church. Earl worked many years as an accountant and was a longtime volunteer at Mercy Hospital. He and his wife Doris loved to square dance and were members of New Horizon Presbyterian Church. Earl was also a member of the Business Breakfast Club of Omaha. In addition to his parents, he is preceded in death by his wife Doris, December 12, 2019, brother Lauren, sisters-in-law Genevieve and Ruth Raitkin, brother-in-law William Lawson. Earl is survived by daughters Anne G. of Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, Janet Williams of Omaha, sons David Raitkin of Council Bluffs, William Raitkin of Omaha, 10 grandchildren, 8 great-grandchildren, brothers James, Ned, Daniel Raitkin, sister-in-law Betty Raitkin. Visitation with the family, Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. at Cutler O'Neill, Mayor, Woodring, Bayless Park Chapel. Funeral service Saturday, 11 a.m. at New Horizon Presbyterian Church. CDC guidelines will be followed and masks are required. Interment, Cedar Lawn Cemetery with military rites at the grave. Memorials are suggested to New Horizon Church. Arthur E. Kaibat. Arthur E. Kaibat, age 73, died October 14, 2020. He was born in Council Bluffs, Iowa on April 13, 1947, to the late Arthur and Marie Howe Kaibat. Arthur proudly served his country in the United States Marine Corps. Arthur is survived by his wife, Renee Kaibat, children, Philly Wall and Kincaid Kaibat, sister Helen Coates, 5 grandchildren, a host of other family and friends. Funeral service is at Hoy Kilnoski Funeral Home on Sunday, October 18, 2020 at 1 p.m. Visitation will be during the hour prior to the service. Interment will be later date in Iowa Veterans Cemetery. The family will direct memorials. Ruth Robertson. Ruth Robertson, age 95, died October 14, 2020. She was born August 3, 1925, to late Clifford and Mildred Kelly. In addition to her parents, Ruth was preceded in death by her husband, Warren Robertson, and brother, Eugene Kelly. She is survived by her daughter, Phyllis Fouts, grandchildren, Joshua Fouts, Leisha Crilly, Ramey and Luke's great-grandchildren, Ezekiel, Asher, Nia, Jonah, Dowie, sisters-in-law Wilma Kelly, Flossie Kolb, and a host of other family and friends. Visitation is at the Hoy Kalinowski Funeral Home on Friday, October 16th, 2020, 5 to 7 p.m. Funeral service is at the funeral home on Saturday at 10 a.m. Interment is in the Silver City, Iowa Cemetery. Memorials are suggested at Silver City Cemetery or Glenwood Methodist Church. You're listening to the Council Bluffs Daily Nonparoll for October 16th, 2020, Friday, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped in Des Moines. I'm Kyle Keegan from Drake University. IRIS volunteers love to hear from listeners. If you have any comments or questions about this or any IRIS program, please call toll-free from anywhere in Iowa at 877-404-4747. C-SPAN suspends Scully after he admits to lie about hack. New York. C-SPAN suspended its political editor, Steve Scully, indefinitely Thursday after he admitted to lying about his Twitter feed being hacked when he was confronted about a questionable exchange with former Trump aide Anthony Scaramucci. The news came on the day of what was supposed to be a career highlight for the 30-year C-SPAN veteran. Scully was to moderate the second debate between President Donald Trump and Democrat Joe Biden, which was canceled after Trump would not agree to a virtual format because of his COVID-19 diagnosis. A week ago, after Trump had criticized him as a never-Trumper, that's quoted, Scully tweeted, quote, at Scaramucci, should I respond to Trump? End quote. Scaramucci, a former Trump communications director and now a critic of the president, advised Scully to ignore him. Scully said that when he saw his tweet had created a controversy, quote, I falsely claimed that my Twitter account had been hacked, end quote. He had been frustrated by Trump's comments and several weeks of criticism on social media and conservative news outlets about his role as a moderator, including attacks directed at his family, he said. Quote, these were both errors in my judgment for which I am totally responsible for, Scully said. Quote, I apologize, end quote. He said he let down his colleagues at C-SPAN, fellow news professionals, and the debate commission. Quote, I ask for their forgiveness as I try to move forward in a moment of reflection and disappointment in myself, end quote, he said. C-SPAN said Scully confessed to lying about the hack on Wednesday. Quote, he understands that he made a serious mistake, the network said. Quote, we were very saddened by this news and do not condone his actions. Trump seized on the news, tweeting, quote, I was right again. I was right again. Steve Scully just admitted he was lying about his Twitter being hacked. The debate was rigged, unquote. The debate commission did not immediately return a message seeking comment. Scully has led the network's presidential election coverage since 1992, but the suspension means he won't be part of C-SPAN's election night programming. Scully has been the moderator of, quote, Washington Journal, the weekly call-in program, and regularly hosted other C-SPAN programs. Bernard Cohen, lawyer who took on mixed marriage laws, dies. Falls Church, Virginia. Bernard S. Cohen, who won a landmark case that led to the U.S. Supreme Court's rejection of laws forbidding interracial marriage and later went on to a successful political career as a state legislator, has died. He was 86. Cohen and legal colleague Phil Hertkop represented Richard and Millard Loving, a white man and black woman who were convicted in Virginia in 1959 of legally cohabiting as a man and wife in order to leave the state for 25 years. Cohen and Hertzkop represented the Lovings as they sought to have their conviction overturned. It resulted in the Supreme Court's unanimous 1967 Loving v. Virginia ruling, which declared anti-miscegenation laws unconstitutional. Cohen died Monday of complications from Parkinson's disease at his home in Fredericksburg, said his son Bennett Cohen. Bernard Cohen had a great sense of humor and liked to ride motorcycles and fly planes, his son said. Quote, he was a bit of a risk taker, and I guess that's in line with the risk he took in his younger professional life, Bennett Cohen said. Bernard Cohen and Hertzkop were ACLU volunteer attorneys only a few years out of law school when he took on the case. Millard Loving was referred to the ACLU by then Attorney General Robert Kennedy, to whom she had written seeking assistance. Quote, we would pinch ourselves and say, do we realize what we're doing? We're handling one of the most important constitutional law cases to come before the court, Cohen said in a documentary about the case that aired on HBO in 2012. The biggest challenge, Cohen said, of the case was not the Supreme Court argument, but getting the case back in state court so it could be appealed. After devising a strategy to do so, the judge who sentenced the Lovings Brown and Lee rejected the request to set aside the conviction, giving the lawyers a ruling that could be appealed. Quote, Almighty God created the races white, black, yellow, Malay, and red, and he placed them on separate continents, but for the interference with his arrangement, there could be no cause for such marriages, the judge wrote in upholding the sentence. The fact that he separated the races shows that he did not intend for the races to mix. End quote. Before arguing the case before the Supreme Court, Cohen said he tried to explain to Richard Loving the legal doctrines he would use. Quote, he was very country, sort of rough, Cohen told the Associated Press in 1992. He was just said, tell them I don't understand why if a man loves a woman he can't marry her no matter what her color. Following the landmark case, Cohen continued a legal career but also veered into politics. He was elected to the House of Delegates in Virginia in 1979, representing the Alexandria area, and served 8 terms. During a 16-year career in the state House of Delegates, Cohen ran as a, quote, unabashed liberal, and reveled in introducing controversial legislation. In 1983, he sponsored a resolution in favor of nuclear freeze that won passage in the House but stalled in the Senate after a Reagan administration official testified against it. Cohen blamed defeat on, quote, cooks in the Defense Department. End quote. He successfully advocated legislation banning smoking in public areas, an era where the tobacco industry was a political powerhouse in Richmond. Brian Moran, who succeeded Cohen in the legislature and is now Virginia's Secretary of Public Safety and Homeland Security, said Cohen opted to retire in 1995 because he had grown weary of campaigning. Arthritis made shaking hands painful, and he'd come to loathe door knocking after getting attacked by a dog. He endorsed Moran as his successor because he wanted a lawyer to hold a seat. Quote, he was a real legal eagle. He respected the law and wanted a lawyer to succeed him, Moran said. Quote, he was a distinguished legislator, extremely bright. His advocacy on behalf of the Lovings rarely came up in his political campaigns, and Moran said many of his legislative colleagues were unaware of it. Bennett Cohen said his sense was that the civil rights case of the 1960s weren't on people's immediate minds in the 80s and 90s when his father was active in politics. The Loving case, though, had a huge resurgence in public interest in the last decade, in part driven by the documentary and the 26th Hollywood feature film Loving, but even more so by the parallels people saw between the Loving case and the debate over same-sex marriage. Bennett Cohen noted that on Monday, the day his dad died, Vice President nominee Kamala Harris talked about the Loving case during Supreme Court confirmation hearings for Amy Coney Barrett. Now we move on to sports. Football fix. After an unprecedented high school football season in Iowa, playoffs are here. 3 city teams will be in action Friday, 2 rematches of their regular season finales. Meanwhile, Abraham Lincoln, with a 5-2 record, has a first-round bye and will host Valley, West Des Moines, next Friday, October 23rd. Creston at Lewis Central. The Titans are coming off their first loss this season, but look to rebound against a Creston team they beat 34-7 in the third week of the season on September 11th. Lewis Central head coach Justin Camard boils down last Friday's loss down to the details. Quote, all throughout the season we've talked about minimizing mistakes and taking care of little things. Had a couple issues this year with those little things not being taken care of, and it caught up to us, Camard said. Quote, when you play against a good football team like Harlan, they're able to execute on those things and make you pay. Harlan hurt us because we weren't disciplined in our approach and didn't execute like we needed to, end quote. While Creston comes in with just one win to its credit, the Panthers have been within one score in 3 of their 6 losses. The Panthers hung with Lewis Central for a quarter, trailing 10-7, but the Titans scored 24 unanswered points to pull away. Quote, when you get to the point in the year where there's no turning back, it's a one-game season every week, Comrade said. Quote, Creston is well coached and they're going to have some things ready to execute, so we've got to be ready for anything and just play good, sound football and execute. Sydney at St. Albert. As Yogi Berra once said, it's deja vu all over again. 1 week after facing off in the regular season finale in Sydney, the same two teams will lock horns once again in their playoff opener, only this time at Al Labor Field. Last Friday, the Falcons extended its win streak to 4 consecutive games and scored a season-high 57 points, but that doesn't guarantee anything this week. Quote, we've done this a couple times in the past. When I was assistant coach, St. Albert head coach Jake Driver said of playing a team 2 straight weeks. Quote, the pros that you have the film broke down and know how to attack them. The con is you did that the week before, and now they know what you want to do. End quote. With Sydney at 0-7, a few new wrinkles or gadget plays wouldn't be shocking, and Driver says they have players who can hurt you on big plays you don't execute. Quote, they've got some dynamic playmakers that can make explosive plays, so it's going to be how we handle it. Quote, he said. For the Sydney defense, it will be about trying to contain Falcon playmakers better than they did a week ago. Sophomore quarterback Brendan Mulhonen was extremely efficient, completing 5 of 10 passes for 136 yards and 3 touchdowns, also rushing for 10 yards and another touchdown. He also kept his ear on the interception column, as he's done all season. Sophomore running back David Helton also had a big night, rushing for 85 yards on 20 carries and 3 touchdowns. St. Albert senior Kai Patterson has been a big play threat all season, rushing for 329 yards on 51 carries, 6.5 yards per carry, and 5 touchdowns. Senior wideout punt and kick returner Sam Reyles has been Mohanan's favorite target, as he's racked up 16 catches for 275 yards and a pair of touchdowns, and also had a punt and kick return touchdown. After playing last week in Sydney, Driver is excited for the type of environment he expects at home on Friday. Quote, anytime we can play at Al Lieber Field, it's an advantage, Driver said. Quote, it's a beautiful setting for high school football game, no matter where you're playing it. It's a little bit more special in the fall when the playoffs come around and you get that playoff atmosphere. It's our guys' first real opportunity at that, because most of them were much younger when we had playoff games. It's a little bit different come playoff time at Al Lieber. Lieber, I don't know how to pronounce that. So it's exciting. Soy City West at Thomas Jefferson. A very familiar foe was TG on Friday. Last week, TJ put together its best performance of the season, scoring a season-best 41 points to secure the first win of the year. Now the Yellow Jackets will try to do it again to extend their season. The Yellow Jackets did their most damage on the ground, rushing 54 times for 345 yards and 3 touchdowns, compared to only 3 passes from QB Austin Schubert, who rushed for 75 yards and a touchdown. In total, TJ had 10 different ball carriers, led by junior Reese Goldfield, 11 carries, 80 yards, and sophomore Devin Bovee, 10 carries, 55 yards. The game may come down to which defense can rise to the occasion, as Soy City is allowing over 42 points per game, while TJ allows over 52 per game. However, TJ's defense is coming off its best performance of the season, allowing its fewest points this season, and held the Wolverines to just 7 points through the first 2 quarters. Quote, we changed our defensive front a little bit in an attempt to control the line of scrimmage, put more pressure on their running game, and hopefully put more pressure on their quarterback, TJ head coach Brant Anderson said. Quote, we were able to get them ahead and force them to have to pass, so that was the main thing. We played a little bit of a softer coverage to try to make them complete passes underneath, to try and make them move the ball down the field in shorter segments. End quote. That said, Anderson knows that just because it worked last week doesn't mean the same will happen tonight. Quote, it makes the scouting a little bit easier, but you also don't know what they're going to change. You assume when you beat a team, they're not going to come back at you with the exact same game plan, Anderson said. Quote, it's about making adjustments and making sure our kids are up for the game. When you beat a team, usually kids are excited to play them again, but you got to make sure they don't assume anything. Glenwood boys and girls win Hawkeye 10. Lewis Central boys are conference runner-up. Denison. Glenwood's boys cross-country team was crowned Hawkeye 10 conference champion Thursday evening after placing 4 runners in the top 15, 2 in the top 10. Within the top 10, freshman Andrew Smith placed 6th for the Rams and Liam Hayes came in 10th. Lewis Central's boys cross-country team finished 2nd in a competitive race. The Titans had 2 runners place in the top 5 as a freshman Ethan Acorn finished 3rd and senior Nathan Sell came in at 4th. Do the Titans would have course like to have brought home the gold? Coach Taylor May was overall very pleased with runners' efforts to earn their runner-up spot. Quote, I'm very proud of the way the boys ran tonight, May said. Quote, they did everything we asked of them and ran a great race. They put themselves in a perfect position, but Glenwood just ran tremendous tonight. Quote, Ethan ran another solid race. To finish 3rd as a freshman in the Hawkeye 10 is very impressive. Nathan ran his best race of the season tonight. I'm very happy for him getting his first top 5 finish at the conference. We had all 7 of our guys in the top 30. We will look to continue that momentum into next week at districts, end quote. Notably, St. Albert had a runner finish in the top 10 as sophomore Colin Lilly placed 9th. The Ram girls team also claimed the conference title as 3 of the team's runners placed within the top 10. Senior Emma Hughes placed 2nd, senior Aaron Swoltz placed 9th, and junior Riley Weiss was 10th. Lewis Central and St. Albert also have a runner finish in the top 10 as well. Sophomore Reese Duncan placed 7th for the Saints and junior Natalie Smith was A for Elsie. Boston. Martinez set career milestones at MRC meet. A pair of Thomas Jefferson runners set career milestones at the Missouri River Conference meet on Thursday at Iowa Western Community College. TJ Sr. Juan Martez finished 9th overall, securing his third All-Missouri Conference honor in as many years, while fellow senior Aiden Budin finished 5th, earning his 4th fall conference. As a team, the Yellow Jackets finished 3rd behind runner-up Lynn Mars and runaway victor Soy City East, which had 7 of the top 8 runners. Quote, in my 36 years of coaching CBTJ cross country, Budin is the only boy to ever run in all conference all 4 years. That includes the Metro Conference and the River Cities Conference. End quote. TJ head coach Doug Muling said, quote, Jennifer Peck raced to all Metro Conference honor during her 4 years from 1987 to 1990 and ran at Mankato State University, earning Division II All-American honors in cross country indoor track. End quote. Abraham Lincoln finished 7th as a team finish with 4 runners placing between 30th and 36th, led by Ethan Linning. In the girls' race, Bishop Heelan won, while All was 5th and TJ was 7th. Lynx sophomore Paige Bracker had the best finish of the two, coming in 10th, while Kara Ronk was the first Yellow Jacket cross finish time with 28th place finish. Iowa kicker Duncan not dwelling on past success. Iowa City. Keith Duncan rewrote record books last season for the Iowa football team, but the Hawkeyes senior kicker isn't a history major. Quote, that doesn't mean a thing now, Duncan said. Quote, I haven't made a field goal this season. I'm 0 for 0 right now, looking for my first opportunity. Duncan, who happens to be a major in sport and recreation management at Iowa, made the most of nearly all his opportunities a year ago. He earned consensus All-American honors after setting Iowa and Big Ten single-season records with 29 field goals, a number which ranks 6th all-time in NCAA history. Duncan converted on 29 of 34 field goal tries, including 14 of 18 attempts from 40 or more yards, and 12 of his 13 kicks away from Kinnick Stadium. Add that to the perfection in 32 PAT attempts, and Duncan contributed 119 points to helping the Hawkeyes build a 10-3 record last season, third on Iowa's single-season scoring list. Duncan's work included hitting 4 field goals at Iowa State and at home against Purdue, positioning Iowa for victories in both games, and he hit a 48-yard field goal with 1 second remaining in the Hawkeyes' 27-24 victory of Nebraska. He celebrated the game winner against the Cornhuskers by blowing kisses to the crowd at Memorial Stadium. Quote, I would have not done anything differently, Duncan said. Quote, I wish it could have lasted longer. It was a lot of fun, something I'll always remember, end quote. Some Nebraska fans didn't give him a chance to forget. Out on Twitter shortly after the game, a few took the time to send handwritten letters offering their opinions on his antics. He didn't mind. Quote, I think that's really cool, Duncan said. Quote, they have a lot of passionate fans. I love playing at Nebraska. We have a lot of respect for their program, as well as their fans. I hope we can do it again this year, end quote. But it won't be the same. As the Hawkeyes work towards their 2:30 p.m. season opener on October 24th at Purdue, Iowa is breaking in a new snapper and holder. Snapper Jackson Schubert and holder Colton Rassler completed their eligibility last season. Senior Austin Spiewick is listed on top of the preseason depth chart as the team's deep snapper, and Ryan Grisonde will likely step into the holder's role after backing up Rassler last season. Quote, we're fortunate to have a lot of good people in the program, end quote, Duncan said. Quote, we're working together well and the open lines of communication have been good, end quote. Iowa special teams coordinator LeVar Woods describes Iowa's competition as special teams as ongoing. Quote, we have had some strong senior leaders in the group and that's always a good place to start, Woods said. Quote, but our expectations have not changed. We expect our guys to compete at a championship level, end quote. Duncan said he takes nothing for granted. Senior Kaleb Shaduk returns as well as after handling Iowa's kickoff duty a year ago during a season when Duncan saw his first action since 2016. Although Duncan converted on 9 of 11 field goal tries and 38 of 39 PAT kicks as a true freshman that season, including a game-winning 33-yard field goal and a 14-13 victory over second-ranked Michigan, as time expired, Miguel Ristinos won the starting place kicking job at the start of the 2017 season and held it through the end of the 2018 season. Duncan said his approach now remains the same as it has throughout his career, starting with a thorough review of each of his kicks from a year ago. Quote, there's always work to do, some way to get better, Duncan said. Quote, that's where my focus is at now. And that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for October 16th, 2020, Friday. The Nonpareil can be heard each weekday at 3 p.m. IRIS volunteers love to hear from listeners. If you have any comments or questions about today's broadcast or any IRIS program, please call toll-free from anywhere in Iowa at 877-404-4747. I'm Kyle Keegan from Drake University in Des Moines. Thank you for listening.